greetings. Welcome to The Dividing Line on an unusual day. Yesterday was a travel day. I don't have a monitor today for some reason. It's nice and blank up there. So I don't know if we're doing anything or not. But, oh, there we go. Yep. Oh, yeah. It's better when it's blank. Anyway, travel day yesterday back from the Masters Academy's International Symposium. So there were two internationals there. On inerrancy, which was sort of the pre-stuff for the Shepherd's Conference, pre-conference conference for the Shepherd's Conference. And I guess I could have stayed. I guess they had the room paid for the week. I guess I could have stayed, but I wasn't informed of that, so, and I couldn't have anyways, so it wouldn't have made much of a difference. But anyhow, it was... very, very well done, and had a great time meeting all sorts of folks. The neat thing about this was folks from all around the world, that listen to this podcast. I have no earthly idea why. It must be they must listen only when John Samson's on, and not when I'm on, because that would make sense, because he's much more, I don't know, metropolitan, you know. I think that what's left, that just skosh of a British accent, a lot of it's gone. A lot of it's gone. You know, I think if John wandered back to England, they'd be going, what's wrong with you? You from Texas? Maybe that accent helps or something. But everybody was talking about how they listen to The Dividing Line and stuff like that, and it's exciting to meet folks. And got to talk with a lot of really interesting folks. And, of course, for me, I'm wearing my EBTC shirt today. I got to see Christian and Matthias and the guys from Berlin and Zurich. And, of course, Greg and Nick were there from Kiev. And so it was sort of old home week as far as that goes. And of course, Rich hasn't been informed of this yet, and he's been really stressed out because of the website issues. We've been having a bunch of website issues, and the cart's been down, and that's not good for us, all that kind of stuff going on. So I just didn't want to completely stress him out and letting him know that once we started talking about September and I'm going to be teaching a class on Hebrews. So we were talking about the class and the level of the class, and I've had to change a lot of what I was thinking of doing with the class. And but lo and behold, we had the 5th through the 15th on the calendar, and it's only 4 days. So as soon as I said that, everybody else is going, oh, you've got a little extra time, huh? Well, I've been teaching now. I've been in Kiev twice last year. And what's unusual there is you have just a single group of guys. See, here in the States, you'll have an MDiv program, and people come and go in it, you know, and people graduate out, and other people come in, and so on and so forth. But there in Kiev, you just have one group of guys that just goes the whole program together. And then they graduate together, and a whole new group comes in. So what's interesting is I get to know the guys. I get to know what kind of questions they're going to be asking, stuff like that. It's sort of cool. Well, the guys that I've known ever since I started going there will graduate very soon. And so there's going to be a whole new group coming in. And Greg was there, Greg White. He runs the work there in Kiev. And he's like, so, only 4 days in Zurich. It's a short flight to Kiev, let me assure you. And he's like, this could be a whole new group, and you'd be one of the first classes they've had. How about New Testament reliability, textual criticism? And so we're gonna work that out. So
I think they're just gonna have you move over there.
No, I don't. Not with Vladimir doing what Vladimir's.
Well, he's taking over everything, so he might as well take you with him, right?
Yeah. So anyway, so Kiev and Zurich instead of just Zurich.
Since you're making announcements, at the moment,
yes.
couple of things. Yes, the shopping cart is still down. And it's still down. And we had a banner up on the website that was very incorrect.
And very incorrect. It wasn't just slightly incorrect.
Yes, very incorrect.
Okay.
And that was regarding the baptism debate happening in less than 3 weeks with Dr. Greg Strawbridge.
That's less than 3 weeks, huh? Well, yeah. I better start. What are we debating?
Baptism, as I just said.
Baptism.
Baptism debate.
I'll have to. What do we believe about that? I'll have
What's
to,
that?
What do we believe about that?
We're credo.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll find something to read on that.
Anyway, there has been a lot of discussion that was going to be held at RTS, and that was incorrect information, and somebody brought that to my attention, going, hey, you got down on the calendar here that it's going to be at Orlando Grace Church, and you also have up on the, you know, the banner there saying it's at RTS. It will be at Orlando Grace Church, Monday, March 23rd. At 7 p.m.
Wow. Monday, March 23rd?
And that is 872 Maitland Avenue. And I'm not even going to try
I'm going to get creamed. You know why?
Why?
Because that's exactly 1 week after my knighthood attempt.
Oh.
There'll be nothing left of me.
Nothing left of you. Wow.
They'll wheel me in a wheelchair. And I'll sit there and go, hey, I'm baptized.
You know, there are Roman Catholics right now who are saying, and how is that different?
No, they were wishing. They're wishing it would be like that.
Will we have to refer to you as Sir Doctor?
Yes,
James?
Yes, you will.
Sir Doctor.
Yes, you will.
Well, I'm not doing it.
I'm sorry, but it's the law, isn't it? Once you're a knight, there you go. The British people will beat you up if you don't do it.
I'm not afraid. Anyway. So anyway, that was a very big deal right there that needed correction, and it has the banner has been corrected. If you have friends that think that it's going to be at RTS, and you actually want them to show up for this, you need to let them know that it's been changed.
This would have worked a lot better if that camera had been working, and you could have.
It's not working. John can tell you it's just a blank screen. This is the camera. This is me. And this is what I look like right now. So what can I say? So we just come back to you, and there's light. And so, you know, one of these days you'll let me out of the dungeon, and keep me locked up. And
right.
Stuff.
Okay. Whatever you say.
Anyway, we are also working on trying to get all these problems on the website straightened out. Come to find out, the Postal Service, we think, is what's been causing a number of issues with the shopping cart, trying to check out, and it failing, and you go back, and all these failed attempts over the last couple of months. And so we're in the process of trying to apply a bunch of patches that apparently they released since last September that we didn't apply, and they, you know.
Patch. That must be some kind of Microsoft thing.
No, it's Microsoft would actually probably make sense. This is the Postal Service. I can only put that in that context and let you draw the rest of the conclusions.
So. Yeah, they're still running on DOS, I think. So.
Well, yeah, and again, this is the Government Postal Service programming.
Gotcha.
Obamacare. No, I mean, anyway.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Those are the biggies. We're trying to fix this, and we'll hope we got some.
So I was going to explain to everybody the knighthood thing, but if we can't have a link up for people to support me in my effort, which we can't until the cart's up anyways.
Well, at this point in time, I'm hoping that this can all be resolved by the end of day tomorrow, maybe Friday. I certainly wouldn't want to go into the weekend. I mean, essentially, you know, we had huge errors over the weekend, and Monday morning I went in to try to start applying the patches and upgrading stuff, and I made the first change, and the server went down, crashed, and burned. And the gurus went in and tried to boot it back up, and it came back up for about 30 seconds and crashed again. And that's when the fun began.
So you broke it, is what you're saying.
That is the general consensus. That is what's on our Facebook page. Haseem, King of Graphics, made sure to put that on
that
the landing page.
Well, because he broke it last time.
Well, he made sure the phrase "blame Rich" is actually on our website, along with some character, cartoon character he put up there I've never seen before. I don't know who that is. I hope it's not bad.
Well, it's a cartoon character. I wouldn't know either. So, yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. Well, so maybe next week I'll be able to explain to you what in the world a knighthood attempt is. Some of you know. I've mentioned it. If you just want to Google Knights of Sufferlandria, you'll know what it is we're talking about. But I'm going to be doing something absolutely insane on a bike on the 16th of March, and I figure it's a good excuse to raise some funds for all the traveling we've got coming up. So we'll let you know about that as we get going. So anyway, I, as I said, was over in California for the TMAI symposium. I spoke on what the Muslim world needs to know about inerrancy. I talked about Itzhar al-Haq and common Muslim perspectives on the corruption of scripture and so on and so forth, and really enjoyed the opportunity to do that. I don't know if you can have a non-intense conversation with Paul Washer. I don't recall a casual, non-intense conversation with Paul Washer. I'm not sure that he has those, actually. But we've got some projects that we're working on together as well, which we'll let you know about in time. So lots of things going on. I did want to start off with something a little lighter before we go on to heavier things. Someone on Twitter sent me this video, and I don't know if you have it. I hope you have it. Is there a car in the middle of it? Okay, good. They sent me this video of a near accident on the icy freeways in Dallas. But what's interesting is the sound. So I hope you have the sound here. I hope not. because we don't have a delay, so be warned. Here's what was sent to me. Oh, whoa.
Time, Riverton Republican member Dan McKay switched to vote in favor, allow the measure to pass through 934. And asked everybody
what are you doing?
Press up switch in case mild and walk.
What'd you do? Okay, we got to start all over again, because, you know, here, this.
At that time, Riverton Republican member Dan McKay switched to vote in favor, allowed the measure to pass through 934, and asked later by the Associated Press on switch from Case Mile and walked away without comment. Ray argues that a team of trained marksmen is faster and more humane than the drawn-out death that occurred in box lethal injection. Well, there's a point there. His bill would call for a firing squad if Utah cannot get lethal injection drugs 30 days before an execution. Critics say the firing squad is a group.
So there you go. So you've got a near accident. The guy ends up headlights at you, and what's in the background the whole time but the last dividing line, where we were discussing the firing squads in Utah. So I found it rather interesting I think the fellow said, well, you see, you were keeping me sharp. If you hadn't kept me awake, who knows what might have happened. So there you go. I'm not sure exactly how you do that in a car. I've never listened to myself in a car. But, you know, I guess you can plug in your phone or something. I don't know.
Yeah, when I first started testing the YouTube stuff, I think the first, the second or third show, I had to leave early, and I just let you keep going. And I, the whole way I'm driving home, I'm watching it on my phone, live. It's pretty trippy, huh?
There you go. Yeah. Well, there we were. We were part of a near accident in Dallas on the obviously extremely icy roads, which we don't have that here, thankfully. Flagstaff, you could, obviously, but down here, no, it just never gets that cold. In all of recorded history, at least that I know of. So, I thought that was an interesting way to start off the day. Is this our the fellow here? I'm wondering. No. Should William Lane Craig debate other Christians? Well, that's interesting. I will look and see if we can take a look at that. That's new. But anyhow, while that's slowly loading or trying to load, actually it's not loading at all for me. Last night I was directed to this particular. Well, hold on. Before I go to that, let me just make a quick comment on what everybody is asking about, and then we'll go on to something a little bit more important as far as that goes. I mentioned on Facebook, I don't know, about 3 or 4 days ago, that I'm not sure if I'm even going to make the attempt. A lot of people want me to do it, but I'm not even sure I'm going to make the attempt to wade into the, as I described it, nuclear waste that has been deposited on the internet in the wake of the Hall-McDermott theonomy debate. You know, I've heard a lot of Arminians complain that when they criticize Reformed theology, all Calvinists say is, you just don't understand. Of course, the reality is that on this program, 1,000 times, we've demonstrated that that's true. We've demonstrated the misrepresentations, and demonstrated the misunderstandings, and the straw men, and so on and so forth. And it's not too difficult to do. I mean, there is an identifiable system of theology that you can interact with people on. But it does seem, it certainly seems to me, that in almost any situation where there is a criticism of theonomy, the first answer is that's not what theonomy says. And it's a little on the confusing side, frustrating side, that it seems to be a really, really movable target. And obviously there are some substantial differences between major voices within the published theonomic camp. And it seems that basically you have to know all of the permutations, variations, strands, flavors, whatever else it might be, to make any comment about the subject at all. And that is troubling to me. And it certainly makes the whole discussion rather difficult. But there have been things posted on the internet now, for example, calling for J.D. Hall to be removed from his church and to be disciplined. And, you know, both sides have claimed to have won the debate, hands down. And I think there's a lot of spinning and chest thumping. Or fast jumping, you could do that too. It doesn't matter. And I honestly just don't know how much good would come out of just providing yet another target for incoming missiles and further confusion. Maybe the best thing to do would be like wait for 6 months. To where it's yesterday's news, and maybe possibly some of the emotions would have died down or something. I don't know. Or do what I said in the Facebook article that I put up. That is, you know what? I'm preaching through the Holiness Code. That's enough. I mean, you know, the last sermons I did, I mean, these are tough sermons. You gotta give the folks at PRBC credit for surviving these pitiful excuses for sermons, because it's not easy to turn a discussion of how to map the law in the sense of identifying its moral foundations and, you know, relating ceremonial with moral and what's the moral in the various judicial laws and what specifically for the nation of Israel in a theocratic context and that's not going to map out to a non-theocratic context, which seems to be part of the issue with theonomy. I guess for some theonomists that doesn't happen, but for others it does. I don't know. And I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm not, in especially with some of the stuff I talked about as far as projects going right now, I am not investing my time in reading a bunch on theonomy. Sorry, not interested, not possible. Not going to be doing any debates on it, so it's just irrelevant. It would be a waste of my time, waste of time I do not have to do so. So my apologies for those who were hoping for the great, the great internet war, the mother of all internet wars, to quote Saddam Hussein's odd press dude. Anyway, so I sort of figure I'm, you know, anyone who would, I guess I am a living, walking contradiction, though, to the constant claim by some theonomists that to not be a theonomist means you're antinomian. I don't know how anybody could listen to what I've said about God's law and especially the subject of homosexuality, looking at the background of the holiness code, what I went through the last time I spoke and talked about examining each of these laws in their context, looking at their language, looking at what they were responding to at that particular time, making application in light of what we can learn from that. I don't know how, anybody who would say that I'm antinomian, when I simply say that to me, it seems rather painfully obvious that that there are elements of the Mosaic Law that were given to a theocratic context and nation, and that I am concerned that I am concerned when I see some statements from some people. I will comment on this. I commented on a statement that was made that has been clarified, okay? Ivy Connerly made a statement that was a very either-or. Either you're for a theonomic position or you believe in following Barack Obama. I said, Ivy, excluded middle, far too simplistic, this is logical error, that's not true. And I was really disappointed in some of the people who came to his defense. And it really did illustrate to me what I see as imbalance on the part of a number of people within the theonomic camp. There is an imbalance there. There's just no question about it. But when I'm listening to what some of these people are saying, one of the things I brought up in this lengthy response that I wrote in a comment, in a comm box, I mean, ugh, what have I come to? Facebook, it's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. I explained the fact that I have, for years now, been giving as an illustration of the fundamental difference between Christianity and Islam the fact that we had Acts 15 and they never have. Now, what does that mean? Well, Acts chapter 15, Jerusalem Council. The apostles gather together. And you have the Jewish element in the church that says, look, the message came, the Messiah came through us. The Messiah was a fulfillment of promises that were given to us. The law was meant to be eternal. Circumcision is the means by which you enter into the people of Israel. Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, and therefore, before you can become a Christian, you have to be a part of the people of promise. Well, the disciples gather together, and they have the big powwow and the big discussion, and they go, no, this is not what Christ taught, and we are not going to make incumbent upon Jewish converts or Jewish people who want to convert this first step of first entering into this covenant before you can go into that covenant. No, it's faith in Jesus Christ and faith in Jesus Christ alone, and then you end up with Galatians and the whole issue about circumcision and things that come from that. And the application I've made is one of the fundamental differences between Christianity and Islam is that because of Acts chapter 15, we do not bring a cultural context with the gospel and identify the two together. That has happened. One of the greatest criticisms of English imperialism was the fact that the gospel became identified with British culture. Certainly couldn't be anymore, sadly. But that many of the missionaries that would go out would attempt to fundamentally alter a culture, not just in regards to fundamentally moral issues, but to basically identify Christianity and a particular cultural manifestation of it as if they're the same thing. And they're not. Because we had Acts chapter 15, the gospel can cross every linguistic, geopolitical boundary and border that man can put up. And so we don't have to bring Sharia, but Islam has to, because Islam is a religio-political system. There are certain elements of Islam that are fundamentally cultural, but have been enshrined within Sharia. And that's what's causing the problem. We don't have to do that, because we had Acts chapter 15. But listening to some theonomists makes me wonder just what they think happened in Acts chapter 15. And just, Acts chapter 15 is important for a lot of reasons. If you think, for example, that it's apostolic to believe that baptism fulfills circumcision, I don't know why there was an Acts chapter 15. Because if that was an apostolic belief, there wasn't any reason for an Acts chapter 15. That had already been decided. That's done. That's interesting. But the important point is, it really does, and I saw someone, I think some people are sensitive to the fact that, wow, the Muslims have this concept of Sharia, and we don't want that. What are the differences? And I did look at an article online of someone who was saying, what's the difference between theonomy and Sharia? And I'll be perfectly honest with you, the article that I read missed the point completely. Maybe due to a lack of understanding of Sharia, I don't know. There's not a lot of people who understand Sharia, but missed the point completely. I think there's a great danger in missing the freedom the gospel has to enter into every possible context of the world. We're going to all the world. And we're not called to turn them into Jews before we turn them into Christians. That's what Acts 15 said. Well, what does that mean when it comes to such things as exhaustive penology and all the rest of that stuff? So there's some things that concern me, and that came up in that, I mentioned that, and after the initial explosion of comments, I don't know how to keep up with comments that people add, 3 weeks after something's posted or something. It seems to me that comment threads are relevant for a day or two, and then it moves on, is sort of how I experience it anyways. But be that as it may, I was disappointed and concerned, because at least in the period of time that I was looking at it, I saw no meaningful interaction with what I said. It's like no one even caught, you know, or sat back for a moment to go, oh, well, that's a concern. I wonder exactly, you know, it was just like, you're not understanding. It was a very, you know, knee-jerk reaction stuff, and almost all the conversations seem to be that way right now. And maybe this is something that cannot be discussed electronically. And unfortunately, that's pretty much the only way any of us talk to each other anymore. You know, when you see young people sitting around texting each other as they're sitting at the table with each other, that's really scary. That's really, really a bad thing. Anyway, so that's a lot of commentary to say I'm not really commenting yet. Maybe I'll think of some way to do it that might be useful. I haven't even listened to the debate yet. No, I have not. People go, I haven't had a chance to. I was busy this weekend. And I mean, you know, when you teach in the morning and then afternoon flight and then you're meeting with people, and I was on my feet yammering all day long. Just, it's great. I mean, you know, we're in the speaker's room in the morning and in walks John MacArthur. And of course the dress code, we were told the dress code was jacket, no tie. And I wrote back and I said, I protest. And so Craig wrote back to me and he says, if you wish to wear your signature bow tie, that's fine with us. And so I had a bright green bow tie on with my green tweed jacket that I got at next to Trinity College in Dublin. And so John MacArthur walks in and he sees me first because of the tie. And he goes, James White. And I looked at him and said, John MacArthur. And I said, why no bow tie? And he just rolled his eyes and said, yeah, you and Al Mohler. And I said, we're trying our best to start a movement here. And he says, you know, I was with Mohler once and he went to a place and bought 10 bow ties at one time. And I said, well, I sent him one recently. It has a library on it. And he wrote back to me and said it was the most literate bow tie he'd ever seen. Yeah, he did. It was. I've given Dr. Mohler a couple of bow ties so far. So, but anyways, the point was, talk. I just have not had time to, and I've got the MP3 ready to go. It's just a matter of loading it on the thing and getting out for a long enough ride. But we'll see when it happens. We'll just see. When it happens, maybe tomorrow. I'm planning on a very, very long run tomorrow, and maybe I can do it then. Maybe it would numb the pain, or maybe it would be so painful that it would distract me from the actual pain of the run I'm planning on doing. You know how far if I do, I'm not going to say I'm going to make this right now, but you know what I'm planning on doing tomorrow? Two thirds of a marathon. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, if you know, let me know if you're going to queue that up, and I'll keep the truck warmed up to come pick you up when you just can't take it anymore and you just go right off a cliff.
If I'm running, I'm not that far from home. I can crawl back if I have to.
Yes, well, we do have cliffs here. People don't.
Not where I'm running, we don't. No, okay. Not where I'm running. So anyway, so we'll see if we get to it. Maybe tomorrow. I don't know. To be honest with you, there's other stuff I need to get to. I mean, I have some major, major projects. And, you know, people are always saying, what can we pray for you all for? Well, you know, we need your support right now. The cart's down. That means people can't donate. And we don't have cash reserves. So, you know, pray that that'll get fixed and the support that's there. The upcoming trips, obviously, there is a travel thing, isn't there, on the website somewhere? Where you can donate toward getting us where the places we need to go, so on and so forth. But we've got some big projects, writing projects. I'm honestly looking for an assistant. That's how overwhelmed I'm going to be. These are big things. They're important things. When you have the opportunities, you've got to take them. You've got to pursue them. And so we're going to be we're going to be trying to do that when we have, as we have the opportunity to do so. So anyways, we'll see if we can get to it. But I'm not making I'm not going to promise that any more than I'm going to promise that I'm going to make 2/3 of a marathon tomorrow. Did I tell you about Ken? Because Ken will hear this. Yes. I need to fill you in on what he said about something else. But initially, what he had said to me was he was challenging me to beat a friend of his who was running in the same race that I was running in. And then it changed to just a time, which I beat by 15 minutes. So I was good on that. Anyways, I turned on my riding phone this morning, and there were some texts from him. And his friend, I had wondered how he had done. His friend, my time was 2:11:20. His was 2:11:18. He was the guy right in front of me. And I had no idea. So it was a virtual tie. I mean, after 2 hours and 11 minutes, 2 seconds, I'll take that. I'll take that. But I had no idea. We were within 2 seconds of each other. Of those thousands of people, the guy that was right in front of me as we ran across was the guy that had been talked about. So I thought that was sort of amazing, actually. And then I told you that the guy, the official timer for the race, listens to the dividing line, which is amazing. I'm like, really? Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, we spent a lot of time, way too much time on that. That was the longest non-comment comment we've ever had. So, where were we here? Okay, yesterday, Taco in channel, and I can spell his nick, it's T-A-C-O. There's a reason why I'll say that, but I'll leave it for him to hear. Anyway, Taco in channel pointed me to this video that was put out by the Ad Council. Now, I didn't have time to look at it. I know I think the Ad Council is public money. I think this is the propaganda wing of the Obama administration. And it's called Love Has No Labels. Now, so my gut feeling is, I have not had time to look into this. I have not had time to prove this. But I think this is your tax dollars at work. This is your tax dollars at work. It's 3 minutes and 20 seconds long. And if you haven't seen it, get a deep seat in the saddle because, all right, here we go.
Keep me warm. he writes, love has no age limit.
We are neighbors and best friends.
We all have different religions, but we have universal love as well.
I love my sister.
Love is love.
Our family is no less than any other family.
Now, notice right there at the end, rethinking, love has no labels, and of course that was same love, the throw all morals and ethics out the window theme by Macklemore, which of course, when you think about the very words, I couldn't change if I wanted to. Just think about the view of man that is inherent in that statement, and what it would, if consistently what we would have seen here, why didn't we have three or four people? Why didn't we have some polys in here? Why didn't we have some incestuous transgenerational relationship? Because I can't change even if I wanted to. Why didn't we have a 7-year-old guy with a 10-year-old girl? Can't change even if I wanted to. Let's be consistent here, shall we? Oh, no, we don't want to be consistent. Because this is effective because our nation now makes moral decisions based upon emotion rather than upon any kind of objective concept of, well, to steal Al Mohler's copyrighted phrase, he never, talks about theology matters being mine, but that's okay. Human flourishing. There were two homosexuals with a little boy. And we're no less than any other family. Yes, you are. That little boy does not have a mother. Purposefully. That's a fact. And if your desire for a mirror image of yourself is so deep-seated that you can then rob a little boy of the example of the mother that he needs, that illustrates the self-centeredness of homosexuality to begin with. And it's child abuse. That's what it is. Child abuse. Well, isn't that better than no parents at all? Isn't that better than just one parent? Shouldn't be a situation. Well, first of all, they didn't produce that boy. They didn't produce that boy. They don't have any wombs. And it would be a grand perversion of human nature to try to give them one. That boy has a mommy somewhere, and he needs that mommy. Well, she passed away. Well, there's a tragedy. Still needs a mommy. Still needs a mommy. Anyway, there is just so much to this. But this is now the way that our society thinks, and is influenced 99% by emotion, music, the idea of thinking things through, thinking about future issues, thinking about the good of the society, and the whole idea of viewing us as creatures of God who have been called to a transcendent purpose, well, just, that's completely out the window. Completely out the window. So, there you go, folks. To the rest of the world, as a tax-paying citizen of the United States of America, I apologize. I am embarrassed by the promotion of sexual perversity on the part of my nation. I call my nation to repent, but my nation does not seem to have any interest whatsoever in repenting. For the Muslims in the audience, this is about as clear an evidence as I could ever produce that this is not a Christian nation. It is not led by Christians. It does not have Christian values. It is a secular nation, which is why the system of government that was designed for it by people who had a Christian worldview ain't working so good no more. because the people who designed it assumed honesty and integrity on the part of the citizenry, the judiciary, and everybody else, and hence the founding fathers themselves said that the Constitution is only sufficient for a godly and moral people. We are neither godly nor moral. I don't think the Constitution is sufficient for us any longer. And that's why it will, if not be overthrown, be so fundamentally rewritten by judicial activism that it'll have very little semblance of being recognized by the people who put it together. So anyway, that little sermon aside, this is what my nation is producing. And the reality is, as many people have noted on Twitter appropriately, if you accept what was said here, if you accept all these, you know, no boundaries, no gender, no disability. Oh, what an amazing thing. Did you notice they had a Down syndrome child? How many of them are left thanks to abortion? Don't think they were saying anything about that, huh? They don't have the moral backbone to say anything about the genocide of Down syndrome individuals. But be that as it may, if you say all that was said here, then the only possible final conclusion is love has no meaning. Because if you say love has no gender, then you're making husband and wife meaningless terms. You're making father and mother meaningless terms. So you're taking partial truths that love has no disability. And how dare, I would not want to be Macklemore and Ryan Lewis and answer before God for using 1 Corinthians chapter 13 in a song specifically designed to overthrow everything that's godly and right about love. Wow. Don't even want to see the judgment on that one. But if you follow this through, then 10 years from now, when it's redone, they'll need to add in all the different groups that I just mentioned. Where's the poly group? Where's the intergenerational love group? Why isn't there one back there of a human and a dog? Why not? If you can't change what you are, and what you are is what you feel you are today, then there is not a single logical reason or argument you can present to me why we shouldn't have a longer version of this with bestiality and pedophilia and incest and every other kind of human sexual behavior right there being celebrated because it's same love. See, same love, the very title, is a lie that only appeals to those who are already in rebellion against God. And theology matters. Theology matters because if you've bought into the omnibenevolence is the only divine attribute, and if you've bought into the theology that refuses to see God's redemptive love in human history for the people of Israel, undeserved, but what that was a different kind of love than what was expressed to any other people. You only of all the peoples of the earth have I known, Yada. If you've already rejected that kind of stuff, then you're already crippled when it comes to making meaningful application to social issues. Because you've got a God who doesn't have the capacity for appropriate differentiation of kinds of love. Theology matters. Theology matters. So there you go. Your tax dollars at work. The cultural, ethical, and moral revolution represented by that amazing. Truly amazing. It'd be really neat if someone would put a Christian version of that out. It wouldn't get any airplay, I know. I know. But it could be done well. It could be done well. In fact, hasn't somebody done a musical response to Same Love? That's ringing a bell with me. That there was a musical response to that. But I don't remember what it was. So that came out a couple years ago, and I think someone did a musical response to that. But it could, the same thing could be done with that screen type thing and illustrate a biblical perspective over against this destruction of biblical love. That would be... see, look at that. Have you seen the reply song to Same Love by Bizzle? No. Bizzle? I'm sorry. I'm showing my utter... And that was, I think, before I asked, which is strange that Twitter would anticipate that. But Andrew is asking, what did the homosexuals have to do with any of the others in that video? Well, the whole idea was, you know, our families no less, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they had two lesbians, two homosexuals. The lesbians didn't have a child, but the two guys did. But the whole thing was gender, which doesn't have any meaning for most of these folks anymore anyways.
Somebody in the channel earlier made a good point. And the one thing you did not see, probably couldn't have, but, well, I guess you could have, and that is a mother with a child in the womb.
Yeah.
We're not going to see that.
Yeah. One of them I was wondering if in the one that said no race, I wasn't sure if she was pregnant or not, but if she was smart, she wouldn't be standing in an X-ray machine anyways, even if that, I'm not even sure that was. That may have just been special effects and then they just walked out or something, I don't know. But I understand. It could be done. It'd be neat to see a response to that. Because what's the less than subtle assertion? Bias, bigotry, you're biased, you're bigoted, you're unloving, and our society rejects you if you don't agree with this. If you don't celebrate two homosexuals walking out with a little child and kissing each other, you're a bad person. That's what we're being told. Now, biblically, you're a bad person if you celebrate that. So it's not a situation of compromise here. There's no compromise here. This is you celebrate ungodliness and you're fulfilling Romans chapter 1. And unfortunately, the vast majority of evangelicals, whatever that term means anymore, are uncomfortable saying what I just said. And if you're uncomfortable with that, if you're saying, White's being being nasty again. Think about it for just a moment. Let's use something that has not, you haven't been dumbed down yet on. If a grandmother and her grandchild walked around there and kissed, in the context not of grandmas and grandsons, the way it's supposed to be, but sexually. Would you then understand why celebrating that would be an evil thing to do? Yeah, that one's still icky enough for us to recognize, no, you can't force me to celebrate that. But you see what's been happening? 30 years ago, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But we have been dumbed down. We have been exposed to it. We've been being beaten over the head over and over and over and over and over again. So that if you make the statement, if you celebrate those lesbians, you celebrate those homosexuals, that is wrong. It is a moral evil to celebrate moral evil. And for a lot of people already, it's like, I don't know, it seems pretty extreme. But if we saw it incest, if we saw it bestiality, okay, that's still, I see what you mean about that. But what if it was a poly group? What if there was three people came out? And what if it was three women or three men? Already, for most people to say, that's morally evil. We're not gonna get a lot of people into our churches if we're talking like that. You see? So it's done one step at a time, one step at a time, one step at a time. And you might say, there could never be a day when evangelicals would celebrate incest. Trust me, I'm actually old enough to tell you, there was a time when I would have said there would never be a day when evangelicals would celebrate homosexuality. Well, that day is here.
Maybe I was looking a little bit too much into it, but I felt the message of that whole thing was, if you draw a line anywhere, now we're going to parade these groups before you, but if you draw a line anywhere, you're a bigot. I got that message loud and clear.
Yeah, love has no labels, so you got it. No question about it. There it is. So there's your tax dollars at work, folks. Congratulations. Certainly at this time of the year when we are doing taxes, it makes us feel really good that's what our money is going toward. But there you go. There it is. So. Let's see, we already looked at that. Well, someone gave me the link to the response to Macklemore's Same Love. I'm tempted to watch it, but I want to watch it before I play it. So we'll if it really hits me, we'll look at it at another point in time. But other than that, no, I don't think so. All right. Man, there's just so many things. But I'm going to stick with what I've got here. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Really? Oh. that says I'm a minute past, huh? Okay. Well, we'd be out of time.
See what Reconstructionism does to you?
Oh, great. Thanks. Appreciate that, Rich. That was Rich Pierce who said that. Address all barbs and email blasts to him for that comment. Not for me. I did not say that. Anyways, we'll pick up with nine things you think you know about Jesus that are probably wrong is one of the articles I wanted to get to. I thought it was like 20 minutes till. How'd that happen? Wow. Okay. We'll see you on the next Dividing Line, which is probably going to be, I think, Friday. Probably Friday. We're just going to shift everything back. So probably on Friday. Just watch Twitter and Facebook and the blog and stuff like that. And we'll see you next time. See you then. God bless.